yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. But this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Greetings, fellow humans, fellow self-quarantiners. I'm coming at you from inside a highly fortified bunker somewhere in Venice, California. Hope wherever you are, you're safe and healthy. Yes, the damn quarantine continues, but that didn't stop me from lining up a special guest for this episode. I've been telling stories on the last few episodes, but I figured I had to get somebody else to talk to me, and in just a little bit, I'm going to be chatting up my old pal, Aisha Tyler. We're going to be doing a little FaceTime chat, and that's the way we do it now for the foreseeable future, but I'm really excited. Aisha and I used to work together back in the day. I'll tell you all about that, and that's exciting. A couple of things to tell you about right now. I'm going to be doing my regular spot guest appearance on the Adam Carolla Show. I think it's going to air next Friday, April 10th. And I'm going to be, we're going to be virtually tasting. Not going to be in the studio together. We'll be doing it from our own little pods. But all of us, Adam, Gina, and Brian, and I, we're going to be drinking, we're going to try a tequila, a bourbon, a gin, and a something else. I can't remember. A rum. That's right. So that's next Friday on the Adam Carolla Show. Also, I'm doing this last night or whenever. I don't know when you're listening to this, but this week I did the first of what will be a weekly live stream happy hour again for the foreseeable future. It's called Nightcap Live. It's a collaboration with Flaviar and a studio called Collider. The next one we're going to do is next Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. Show lasts about an hour. You can access it on the Flaviar Facebook or YouTube channel or on the Collider Facebook or YouTube channel. It's a lot of fun. We're going to have a guest. Don't know who that's going to be yet. We give out prizes, and just try to have a little distraction for you in these times, these troubled times. Another distraction is actually today, if you're listening to it on the day this podcast went up, which is April 3rd. Jack Daniels is doing a virtual Friday night happy hour with country music star Chase Rice. He's going to be performing a set from his home to benefit the Sweet Relief Musician Fund's COVID-19 Fund. The Sweet Relief Musicians Fund is a nonprofit that for 24 years they've been offering assistance to professional musicians and industry workers in need, and obviously a lot of them are in need right now, and they created this special COVID-19 Fund. That's going to air live on Rice's Instagram and both Jack Daniels and Rice's Facebook pages. Again, that's Friday, April 3rd at 7 p.m. Eastern time. It's a virtual concert. He's going to do acoustic performances, including his top 25 single, Lonely If You Are, off his recent album, The Album Part 1, it's called. And he's going to do a little sneak peek of some new stuff that he's got going. All right? I'm like, stuffy. That scares me. Help! I want to throw out kudos. You know, you're probably aware of this. If you're into the drinking community, you're into this, that a lot of distilleries have now converted their facilities to make hand sanitizer, and I think that's great that they're doing it. And I just wanted to give a shout out to a few of the ones. By no means is this a complete list. This is just a couple of the ones that I know of, and I just want to give them a little credit for doing that and pitching in a time of great need for hand sanitizer. So Old Forester's doing that, Woodford Reserve, Rabbit Hole Distillery, Catoctin Creek, Silent Pool Gin, Iron Smoke, Savage & Cook, Bacardi, Crowbar, the New York Distilling Company, and Corsair. And then also Diageo, which is a behemoth, and they own so many brands. Diageo is also converting numerous distilleries in their portfolio to make hand sanitizer. So thanks to everybody out there, our friends in the industry that are pitching in and helping out. As always, I'm going to remind you to follow me on Instagram and Twitter at The Imbiber, T-H-E-I-M-B-I-B-E-R. Oh, don't get stuffy, Dan. You know, liquor sales were up in March by 33% over last March. That's insane. People are drinking while they're quarantining, that's for sure. And so I wanted to give you a little heads up. The 2020 San Francisco World Spirits Competition was held in San Francisco a few weeks back. I guess they got in right under the gun before the quarantine. I was supposed to be there, judge. I'm a judge at the competition, and I was supposed to do a celebrity panel with Lars Ulrich and Walton Goggins, but I couldn't make it, and neither could the guys. So, but it did happen. I had 3,000 entries from all over the world, and the results just came out, and I wanted to give you a couple of the ones that jumped out at me in case you're looking for stuff to buy while you're home on social distancing. The Best in Show whiskey, that is the very best whiskey of all of them, chosen by this distinguished panel of judges, was the Glendronach Revival 15-year-old single malt scotch. It's a revered whiskey among connoisseurs, and this has been around for a while. They re-released it in 2018 after about 3 years of not being around, that particular expression. And it's just, it's got cherry wood maturation. It's just a beautiful, beautiful whiskey. And it's about $93 a bottle. So the Glendronach Revival 15-year-old, okay? The Best in Show unaged white spirit was Defiance Navy Strength Gin. That's from Manchester, England. The Navy Strength, obviously, a little bit more potent than the usual one. This is 57% alcohol. It's got some cardamom spice, a little bit of pine in there, some citrus. It's a beautiful one, and it's got a nice long finish to it. It's $50 for that gin. The best blended, not best in show, but best blended malt scotch whiskey was Compass Box, the Spice Tree Scotch, and that's $68 a bottle. The best small batch bourbon aged 6 to 10 years with our old friends at Barrel Bourbon, batch 21, 10-year-old cask strength, $90 a bottle. Joe Beatrice and his team over there at Barrel are doing a great job. I love it. One of my favorites. And the best vodka, I know people like vodka, Organica Life vodka out of Russia, 40% alcohol, only $32 a bottle for Organica Life vodka. That was the best vodka at the San Francisco World Spirits Competition. Oh, and the best cream dairy liqueur, Wayne Gretzky number 99 Canadian cream liqueur out of Ontario, Canada. I've not had it, okay? It's $35 a bottle, 17% alcohol. But Wayne Gretzky, it's Wayne Gretzky's cream liqueur. It's got to be the greatest because Wayne Gretzky's the greatest, right? I don't know. Try it. So then you got that stuff, my friends. What else? I'm excited to talk to Aisha Tyler in just a little bit. I think we should almost just get to that. Let me run. Oh, we got to pay the bills a little bit here. Let me pay some bills. Support for What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn comes from Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Listen, folks, when it comes to dating, it's a jungle out there. But when you do find someone who wants to take you home, you better make sure it's not a jungle down there. That's why I use Manscaped, a revolutionary electric trimmer that makes accidents a thing of the past. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag your nuts. Take my word on this. No, seriously, you don't want to Google snag your nuts. It's going to take you down a dark road. Another reason to get Manscaped is that you don't want to use the same trimmer on your face as you're using on your balls. That's just nasty. Oh, and Manscaped also has the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why not use it on the smelliest part of your body? Get 20% off and free shipping with the code DRINKING at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code DRINKING. And always use the right tools for the job. Always use Manscaped. Your balls will thank you.
Hey, this is best-selling author Joel Stein, and you're listening to average selling author Dan Dunn.
Oh, Joel Stein's a funny one, isn't he? Speaking of funny, Aisha Tyler, she is a comedian and an actress and a director and a talk show host and a lot of other things, an author. She's everything. She played Andrea Marino and The Ghost Whisperer, Dr. Tara Lewis in Criminal Minds. She's Mother Nature in all those Santa Claus films. And of course, she voices Lana Kane on Archer. She also got recurring roles on CSI and she back in the day on Friends. She was a co-host on the CBS's The Talk, and she won a Daytime Emmy Award for Outstanding Entertainment Talk Show Host. She did Whose Line Is It Anyway? But my personal favorite credit of Aisha Tyler's is the host of Talk Soup, where yours truly was a writer on that staff. I was writing jokes for Aisha, and she was making me look good by delivering them with humor and gusto. So yeah, I'm going to hop on a FaceTime chat with Aisha right now, and let's give it a listen. Wow, look at you. Look at you.
Look at me.
Through the computer screen. There you are.
It's exciting to see your face. I know I look like I have on sunglasses, but my seeing eyeglasses, because I'm old, are also the ones that...
I love that I just lost you for a second right there. I'll fill in what she was going to say.
What can you mean?
You broke up. You're back?
Oh, yes. And you know what? If it gets ugly, we can restart and I can try to get on a different network. How do you feel?
I think that was okay.
Am I sounding okay?
I think you sound good. You're a little...
Okay, good. Yeah. What I was saying was, I know I look like a maniac, but my actual seeing eyeglasses are also, they turn dark in the sun. So I constantly look like I'm trying to mimic Lenny Kravitz in public, but these are my actual eyeglasses.
I knew you always wanted to be Bono.
And now, always. Weird old douchebag with sunglasses on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, indoors. Yeah, totally.
So as I mentioned in the intro, Aisha and I worked together at Talk Soup. Well, I worked for her. She was the...
We worked together.
She was the show. She was the talent.
We worked together.
And it was a really... I loved that time there. I felt like it was boot camp for me because
it was.
We didn't make any money. You did. I mean, you made all the money, but I didn't make any money.
I did not make a lot of money in that job.
No.
I think that I made like the equivalent of like a mid-level corporate person in a cubicle. I mean, it was my first real TV job. So, yeah, I mean, sure. I'm not going to like be like boohoo me,
yeah.
But it wasn't like a big money job. It was just like a fun, happy job.
But it was a great stepping stone because, you know, for those of you who don't know, like the very first host of Talk Soup was Greg Kinnear, and then John Henson and Hal Sparks and then Aisha and everybody, as we know, when Hal Sparks won the Oscar last year, everybody has gone on to you. Sorry, Hal. Look at me. In time of pandemic.
But then Joel McKeel came back and revived it and revived the show and has done very well for himself. And now there's a new girl doing it. And I don't know her name because I'm a terrible person.
I don't get it.
Nobody watches Z. But I'm still happy for her. And now I actually really want to like look her name up while we're talking.
While we're on the computer.
Because... while we're on the computer,
but
we had
a great time. I mean, we did the other thing that we got to do a lot of cool stuff when we were there. We went to Aspen. That was a very fun trip.
We did a lot of really cool stuff when that show. Oh, her name is Jade Cata Preta. I don't know her. I think she's a stand-up. She seems very cute. And we'll see. We'll see. I mean, you know, good luck to her. It's been a long time. Hopefully the people that are running that network now are different than when we were there, because when we were there, they were total fucking jackals.
Well, the guy that ran the network, he was a sweetheart. Remember when he came in and fired us? You could not, like, this guy came in, I'm not going to say his name. He came in, he sat down, I remember he crossed his legs. I don't think he had a cashmere sweater wrapped around his neck, but he probably in my mind he did because it was
like
that
sweater set like the polo
like that
cashmere sweater,
and he just
with the sleeves like folded around each other tucked. Yeah.
And he was lounging in the chair and he looked so fucking bored, right? Like, I can't believe I have to come in here and fire all these people, right? And
like,
it was
ruin my day,
and it was unexpected. Like, we had no idea this was coming, right? And
let me contextualize how much we didn't know. For months, they had been telling us, you're going to get a new set, you're going to get a new time slot, you're going to get a new look for the show, we're going to move you behind, they were going to put us behind, what's his name? The really tall guy with the crazy hair. I'm
Howard
really
Stern.
A terrible human being. Howard Stern. Yeah. It wasn't like we were languishing and we knew something, like, you know, when you're in a bad relationship and like no one's talking, you're like, you know, the end is coming. They were actively courting us.
Yeah.
The reason that the soup is called the soup is because I never do this. I'm not one of these people, but like I'm going to own this completely because it's true. I started calling the show The Soup when I started hosting it. Then they said, we want you to reboot the show in a new format with a new focus on like not just talk shows, but like reality. We worked on making this new show called The Soup.
Oh, I worked on it too. Yeah.
You remember, we all worked on it together. We created this new show called The Soup that was going to be less focused on talk shows, more focused on like social media and reality shows. And they were like, we're going to move you behind Howard Stern. We're going to give you more time. We're going to give you more money. And then they canceled us. So of course it was a fucking surprise.
And the funniest was he came in, and I remember because it was a Thursday, and he said, it wasn't like, hey, guys, you know, this was the flagship show for a long time at E. It was the only show that ever got an Emmy nomination. It's the show most people first came to know E by was Talk Soup. Mm-hmm. And he came in and he said, you can do a last show if you want or not.
If you want.
Or it's over.
You can do
and
one last show.
Thank God for you, Aisha. You said, yeah, no, we'll do a show. And showed up the next day with a case of champagne. And we did that thing in the morning. And I think all of us were pretty bombed by the time we got
absolutely
on.
Absolutely lit. But I mean, that was a decade long, like you said, it was like a keystone show for that network. It was what put them on the map. And then it was unceremonious, but like, look, frankly, I was the talent. Like I knew I was going to get another job, but they boned the shit out of the staff on that show. There were writers who stopped, like literally left the business after that because no one had an opportunity. Like give us a month, let everybody go out and like find a new job. These people had mortgages and kids. It was like so disrespectful.
Well, the people that left the business, you know what I did? I decided to write a book. I got into the lucrative world of book writing. We can go there too. And by the way, later Aisha and I will be bitching about we were on the same imprint and we had the same publicist. And I remember going, I would kill that motherfucker if I saw him, but we'll go to that later. We're angry now. We're angry in quarantine.
We're locked in, drunk, like day drinking.
Yeah,
quarantine.
Day drinking. I knew Talk Soup was over. I mean, the beginning of the end, which was really, really funny though, was there was a sketch.
Somehow
people thought I wrote this, and I didn't write it.
I'll never take it back, Dan. Yeah. It was funny then, and it's funny now.
So it involved a Raggedy Ann doll and Tickle Me Elmo, and Elmo was up Raggedy Ann's dress, and we ran this sketch.
It was funny then, and it is funny now. Yeah. And when I describe it to people, there's not one human being that I've described that sketch to who didn't laugh their ass off.
All right, let's hear it.
It was the new Tickle, because Tickle Me Elmo was like the rage, remember? Like you couldn't find it. If you went like Toys R Us, which is also defunct now, like you couldn't find that doll. It was like I don't know anything about dolls, but you know, it was a big bad deal. And we got one, and then we put Raggedy Ann on his face, and she said some, you know, essentially some version.
Well,
of like,
he vibrated. He vibrated. Yeah. That was what it was.
He was laughing and
giggling. And so Elmo was saying, somebody did the Elmo voice, was like, Elmo doesn't like it here. It's dark. I can't see. And Raggedy Ann goes, shut up, bitch.
Yeah, it was great. It's so funny.
And it took all of about 5 minutes for after that aired for the Disney Corporation or whoever owned Raggedy Ann to say, we are shutting fucking, we're pulling all of our advertising. Who owned E then? Was it Disney? Somebody owned E that was.
I have no idea.
And it was this massive thing. So, but the thing about it that got really funny was this should have been its own TV show. They assigned these lawyers to us. It was like, this was the crackdown. And so here was the idea. So the lawyers, now what would happen is normally you'd have a writer's room and we would go in and we'd pitch our jokes and Aisha would come in and we'd all decide what, you know, ultimately the say lied with you. But it was like, the final say was with you, but it's like what the jokes are going to be. So now what ended up happening was every time we'd come in, the lawyers would come into the room and they'd be sitting in the writer's room, which I just didn't belong there. They weren't funny. And so we had to really work hard to come up with things that were with coded language, a lot of coded language. Like there was,
right.
I remember we did a dirty,
a lot of stuff past
well,
them.
There was,
they were very literal. It wasn't just that they weren't funny. Like they didn't understand the mechanics of comedy. Like they didn't understand irony or double entendres or sarcasm. So remember we did something about, not Jeremy Irons, but, oh, what's his name? I literally cannot remember anything. You know, the crazy conservative guy that's mad at everybody all the time. James Woods. So the guy that's dating middle schoolers. So guys, that was irony. Don't send me a letter. So we did a joke about James Woods in a loincloth. And they were like, is there a photo of James Woods in a loincloth? Can we see it so we know that it's backed up by evidence? And we were like, no. Like literally the answer to you is like a firm and everlasting no, because we can never speak because we don't speak the same language. And this conversation's over. Like yeah. They were just the worst.
There was a thing back in the day, I don't know if it's still a thing, but it was called like the pink sock. And apparently it was a reference to, it was a sexual thing where if you got your ass fucked so much that your innards of your ass would come out. And it looked like a pink sock hanging from your ass. And this was a thing back then. And so we wrote this joke about, and we made it seem like, we wrote the pink sock. I just remember having to defend it. And I was in the room.
We did like a lot of Detroit hot plates. And
yeah,
it's
Dirty Sanchez. That's it.
So if you didn't know what they were, there was no Urban Dictionary at that time. You couldn't look it up really.
But this is how bad it was. I remember like making it up on the spot. And he's going, what is the pink sock? And I said, well, the joke is like, see, she's got that red shirt on there. You know, the woman in the clip has a red shirt. So she washed the shirt with the white laundry. I'm just making this, and it makes absolutely no sense. I'm like, she's washed the shirt. And, you know, then the pink sock comes out. And then the pink sock is like, she doesn't realize the pink sock's hanging off her butt, you know, and she doesn't get it. And they're like, okay, it couldn't be any less funny what I just described. And they're going,
right,
that works for us. And we're like, okay, we got the protracted asshole joke in. Now what's next? So anyway.
I will say this, like in retrospect, like TalkSoup was the show that put that network on the map. And at the time they were transitioning from what they were then to what they are now. When I look back, what I realize is like that network was never brave enough to actually have a real comedy show on it. No. Do you know what I mean? Like it doesn't, you know, it's a show that like, I mean, it's a network that, you know, curries favor with celebrities. And so like you by its very nature, it can't be edgy. Like we couldn't make fun of anybody because the next day the network would be like begging them to come on the news or something like
that.
Don't you think the
evolution
doomed.
Though of that, Aisha, I think it when it evolved is when it went from being almost strictly clips from Jerry Springer and Maury and all that, it started to evolve to things that involve celebrities, like, you know, some of the shows. And once that happened, that's when they got really worried about what we would do. When you're making fun of, you know, the hoi polloi on the Jerry Springer show,
nobody cares,
you know, and they don't care. They don't know either. But once it started to veer into the world of celebrity, they got real skittish. They were like, oh, we might not be able to get her to talk to Ryan Seacrest, you know.
It's just an earnest network. You know what I mean? They're just there. They trade in earnestness. And you know, I mean, that's probably why, I mean, like Joel's insanely funny. I remember like the last year that we were there, I watched a pilot that he did for some other network. But this is like, there was no kind of like overlap between like my life at E and Joel's because, you know, it's a bunch of time transpired. But I just remember thinking like, this guy's insanely funny. And then I was like super happy for him when I got the job. And, you know, I think that the show lasted as long as it did because of Joel's sustained kind of like combination of like hilarity and I don't give a fuckness. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And that's naturally, you know, someone can, you know, at me online, but like, I just think like no matter how many women work over at E, it's kind of naturally like they just like guys over there. You know what I mean? Like when I got that job, I kind of got that. They weren't ever going to hire me for that job. I auditioned for it. The tape was really good. It was circulating at E for 6 months. And everyone's like, no, a girl can't do a show like this. A girl could never host a show like this. This is never going to work with a girl. And then they just gave me one shot. Like they were giving all these celebrities like a week on the air. They gave me one episode and the fan mail was so effusive that they were kind of...
What's she saying now? Because I lost her for a second. Oh, we lost you for a second.
Where did you lose me?
You were, you just keep going.
Oh, anyway, so like, you know, all these, when I finally got my one shot at like just hosting one show on the air, it was the fan mail that got me that job. It wasn't the executives believing in me. And I remember having this conversation with the exec. He's like, yeah, like, how is this going to work? Like, you're a girl and you're like a black girl. Like, are guys going to watch the show?
You're a black girl.
Like, how's that going to work? Like, he literally, like, he was like, how is this, like, do guys even like you? Do they even listen to it? I was just like, ugh. So like, you know, they went back to kind of their natural habitat with Joel, yeah. But Joel was great, and Joel is great, and he's one of the funniest people that I know. And I was thrilled that the show had a second life, and I'm happy it's having a third life. It's just that, like, that network isn't cool enough to have a comedy show. It just isn't.
By the way, do you at all miss the days when executives could say, but you're a black girl, how's this going
to
work?
Oh, God, I would love to go back to the times when I had to explain my appeal to some mid-level dude in an ill-fitting
you're
suit.
You're a black girl.
I would love, literally, like, how's that going to work? Like, are white guys even going to watch the show?
No.
I was like, I don't know.
You know what else he went down?
You're blocking the bar.
He went downhill when Ted Koppel left, too. Got rid of that. So now let's move on to bitching about our publicist. No, I'm joking. I want to tell you this, by the way. We are drinking. Aisha and I are drinking, and we are drinking. Do you call it Courage and Stone or Courage Plus?
Courage and Stone. Courage and Stone.
Courage and Stone. Courage and Stone. Yeah. This has been gestating for 17 years. I remember talking about this
my entire adult life.
Before I met her.
I started working on it in 2014. I got my VC partner in 2015. We really kind of incorporated in 2016, and then it took us from then to now to get the formulas right and then to get the government licensing, because it's a relatively new category, this like premium ready to drink category. When we were starting, there weren't a lot of ready to drink beverages out there. And so it just took us a long time to kind of get it right and then get the approvals. And, you know, there's nobody really running the government right now.
Well, you were serious about it. I remember years ago, I was at Tales of the Cocktail in New Orleans, and Tales of the Cocktail is one of the biggest cocktail festivals in the world, probably the biggest in America. And what do I see? I look over, and who's standing there? Aisha Tyler.
That was a big surprise. Were we in the lobby of a hotel?
At the Hotel Monteleone. And you were checking out some various tinctures and things. And
I
looked over
table.
And I had to almost like rub my eyes because I was probably drunk. And I'm like,
we were both so
that looks like Aisha Tyler.
I remember
she can't
that
be here.
Vividly.
Yeah.
Dan, so I don't know if that was I think that was my first Tales. And I had made some friends in the spirits. I have a lot of friends that are bartenders. And I was in New York drinking with some of them. And they introduced me to some brand managers, I think at Pernod Ricard or maybe at
You knew Simon Ford, right?
I knew Simon. And I knew the guys at Attaboy. And I knew the guys at PDT. Like mainly because I drank at those places.
Yeah.
Because I'm a professional, a very classy lush.
You?
And they were all like, are you coming to Tales? Because I was like, I'm developing this cocktail line. They're like, are you coming to Tales? And I was like, I don't know what that is. And they were all like, calm down. And I went on my own. And I was like, I'm not going to know anybody at this thing. This is so dumb. And I knew everyone. Yeah. What does it say about me that I knew everybody at this thing?
Well, you and I, do you remember the night we ended up at the Tipitina's?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember looking up on the stage, and I'm like, why is Jim Belushi up there? But, you know, this kind of thing happens. Jim Belushi's playing.
That's what happens.
I think we might have been overserved that night as well. And then we ended up at some gala it was in a museum or something. I know.
It was in the aquarium.
You and I
went.
It
was the closing night gala in the aquarium. Yeah. I mean, I've done Tales now, I think, 3 or 4 times. And what I remember most about that, other than my crushing 4-day hangover, was this is hard to explain, but I think people will understand. Like, I love bartenders. I love them. I was a bartender in college,
you go to school in San Francisco?
No, I went to Dartmouth in New Hampshire, and I bartended at Peter Christian's, which is not there anymore. But,
Dartmouth, it's a community college in New Hampshire.
It's very easy to get into, and very diverse. I remember going to the second level, and I'm not going to know anybody. I'll be by myself. And like, that'll be fine. I'm okay. But I travel so much for work, and I would always be alone in bars. And I'd eat at the bar. I'd sit up at the bar. And I remember being at Tales and being like, oh God, like so many of my singular dining experiences were made better by some friendly, easygoing, honestly, kind-hearted bartender who didn't just make me a drink and didn't just like make small talk to be polite, but like really was like, yeah, tell me about yourself. And I would have these great conversations with these guys. And I was like, well, why? Why do you have good conversations with bartenders? Because for the most part, bartenders are relatively self-selecting. They're people who like to make other people happy. They want to ask you what you want. They want to make you what you want. They want you to enjoy your night. Of course, they want you to tip, but a function of tipping is that you enjoyed yourself. And you know, when a bartender makes you a great drink and you love it, like you see that they love that they made you something that you enjoyed. And that's why, like,
You caught the bug. You caught the bug there, though, to want to do something like Courage and Stone.
Because I go to so many bars on my own, and I get home to my apartment, I'm like, shit, all I have is like a half a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc and a you know, veggie burrito. So I started batching my own drinks to keep in my fridge so that I wouldn't have to make a mess when I wanted to drink on a Wednesday night. I just was making Negronis and keeping them in like in a swing top bottle in my fridge. And I thought, man, it'd be so great if you could just buy a bottle of Negronis in the store. And that's literally how Courage and Stone.
So this one I'm drinking right here is the classic Manhattan. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's in so a really beautiful bottle. Who did your bottle? These bottles are gorgeous. Yeah.
I developed it just with my creative team and I with the UTA Brand Studio. They're incredible guys over there. And we've already won awards, but we won awards for the bottle and the design before the product ever came out, which was pretty amazing. Well, but I wanted something that felt really substantial and that you could set on your bar and it would look and feel like a decanter. So we've got a glass cork. You know, you can cap and recap. The bottle's thermal printed, so you can sink it in ice or keep it in the fridge, and the condensation in the water is not going to ruin the label.
I'm going to take a picture of this with you.
Yeah, you can put it. Yeah, you can put it in a big bowl of ice at a party, or you can keep it in your fridge, take it out, put it back, take it out, put it back, and it's never going to make the bottle look like shit. And that bubby right there, you can slide in your pocket and take it to a party. It's a very nice flask size bottle that plays like a flask, I think.
Taking pictures here. So I went to the fake launch. Remember the fake launch party?
Oh, there were a lot of those.
There was a fake launch.
We call those activations, Dan. We call those activations.
That was like 3 years ago. I remember Aisha
said, 2016.
Aisha's like, you got to come to the airport, right? And I said, all right. I went to, I mean, to tell like people that don't live in LA, the level of commitment I have to this friendship, voluntarily go to the airport when I'm not flying anywhere. I was like, wait, you mean LAX? You're like, yeah.
Also, it was a high level of day drinking. It was like 10:30 in the morning.
Oh, and it was cool. What's his name was there from Key and Peele.
Michael Key.
And that was such a great thing to meet him.
It was so fun.
And I was so happy for you. I'm like, this is going to be amazing when it comes out 4 years from now.
Not to yada yada the story, but like what you were drinking at the time were like my original prototypes that I was making in my home. They were what I used to find my VC partner and what we used to launch the product. And we submitted, then we had to find a way to match the flavors at scale. Like we had to find a company that would build a packet of, like, essentially I made a cake and then we had to find a company that could get eggs and butter and sugar and flour and make a cake that tasted just like my cake. But their components had to be Whole Foods compliant, no stabilizers, no colors, no garbage. So we had to find a company that would do that for us. And then they had to make sure that their cake tasted exactly like my cake. That took a very long time. There are a lot of insane people in the booze industry. Not loopy, not crazy, insane. Sure. And without naming names, we got in bed with a guy who, when we went to his house, he was like setting off sticks of dynamite in his backyard. We got in bed with a guy who we went all the way down the road with him, and then he pulled out at the last minute. Like we had several people who like wanted to do it, and then when it came time to scale up, they like it was too much work for them. It was too hard for them. And then when we finally got the formulas right, where they tasted the way that I wanted them to taste, we submitted them to the government, and just didn't hear anything. And it typically took like 6 to 12 weeks. We didn't hear anything for a year and a half.
Was this Obama or Trump?
This was end of Obama, beginning of Trump.
Okay. Because, I mean, it had to be Obama's fault because, you know, the Trump administration, everything's running smoothly under the Trump administration.
Everything is.
How are you doing, by the way, in your quarantine?
I love it. I mean, look, I'm a little bit of a prepper. So I've been ready for this for a very long time. I have go bags at my house, go bags in my car. I had gloves and masks back in, like, you know, 2016. So I've been prepared. I have dry food stores for 2 years. So I was ready for all of this. And mainly what I've been doing, because when I'm not acting, I'm a writer and I'm developing creatively, is just reading and writing and doing this with people. I do a happy hour twice a week that's focused on a different COVID-focused charity. So I drink online with people to raise money for charities that are focused on helping vulnerable communities during this crisis. So maybe I love it isn't the right word, but like, it's exciting to me to find a way to be of service. And if I was doing a TV show, I wouldn't have the bandwidth to be thinking all the time about what can I do that is meaningful charitable work. So right now I've got... We've all been like, all of us, I know, you're like, God, it would be so great to hit the pause on my life for a couple of weeks and like clean my apartment, do my laundry, organize my drawers, donate to charity, maybe volunteer, check in on my mom, check in on my friends. And I know there are a lot of people who are really suffering during this crisis, so I'm not trying to minimize that. But it has been interesting for me to be able to devote almost all of my free time to raising money for other people's charities. And a lot of them have been, so we've been doing Meals on Wheels, Feeding America, the International Rescue Committee, the Red Cross, and then we've been doing two bartender and restaurant-focused charities. One is the U.S. Bartenders Guild, which is helping support out-of-work bartenders, keeping them there if they have medical support, you know, insurance support, also just keeping them alive and fed. You've probably seen the hashtag Tip Your Bartenders. And then Chef Edward Lee just started another initiative. I think it's called the Lee Initiative, which is focused on restaurant workers overall. So servers, bartenders, dishwashers, busboys, everybody in the restaurant industry, literally just giving them free food and free essential supplies. And they're in like major cities across the country. It just launched yesterday. I pushed it out on my socials today.
So yeah, where do people go if they want to get information?
So you can come to me at Aisha Tyler on all social platforms. I've pushed that out on every single, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Tumblr. And the two ones that are focused on the work on the restaurant workers industry are the U.S. Bartenders Guild and the Lee Initiative, L-E-E Initiative. And they're really important. And you know, for all of us that like, I don't cook. I mean, I eat in restaurants all the time. And they're a big part of my life. And I was a bartender and I was a waitress. And I know how shitty that life is and how little money they make. So, you know, for me to try to do anything I can to make sure that these people aren't, you know, they live paycheck to paycheck. They're living tip to tip. When I was a bartender and waitress, I was making $1.90 an hour. I lived on tips. If I didn't get tipped, I didn't eat. So to try to find a way to keep these people afloat through whatever this ends up looking like for however long it lasts is really important to me.
I was just going to say, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you at some point, probably in 2021, when we get through this. It is pretty incredible to me to think about the stop it is for you, because I don't know many people in this business that work harder than you do. You do, at one point I remember reaching out to you, because we were going to do this a while ago, and I think it was the talk was ending and
thank you for being patient with me, by the way. This has taken a long time.
You and I actually spoke and I could hear the stress in your voice that you were so exhausted because you were doing a lot of things. And that's admirable, by the way. I love that quality that you know, you're working, man. Like you're not, you know, there's not a moment when you're sitting back, but so this must be...
That comes from growing up poor, Dan.
It's me and you, but that's what I say.
I'm confident this is going to end at any minute.
This year was going to be looking like a really good year for me in terms of... And it'll be fine. I'm doing fine. But what was funny was even when I had all of these sort of really... You know, I got... You know, you and I have talked... You know, we have script things going and whatnot too.
Yeah,
and, but I,
exactly.
I still... Like a magazine, like a website would reach out to me and say... Do you want to do this piece for $300? And I'd go, all right, I'll do it. And I'm like, I don't need $300, right? I mean, I don't need it, but I'm like, this is way more work than I should be doing for $300.
Well, you're just so panicked that the work
is going
to dry up.
I can't say no. I'm like, I can't say no.
Absolutely. You know,
by the way, that's what I made at Talk Soup a week, $300.
Oh, geez. But by the way, to be fair, it was in 1992.
That's true. It was a long time ago.
He was practicing.
No, it was 2000.
2001.
2001. It was right before 9/11. And we're
$100,000 in today's dollars.
Where you coined my nickname that sometimes still
Puka
comes.
Puka Dan. Dan used to wear a little puka shell necklace like that guy at Theta Delt from college. It was like halfway between jewelry and choking him to death. He was trying to go out like Michael Hutchence, just masturbating and getting slowly choked to death by his necklace. And I just called him Puka Dan.
You would call me that on the show, and my mom had no clue about anything. And my mom would say, "Who's Poopy Dan?" I'm like, "It's not
who's
Poopy
this
Dan.
Poopy Dan. And why does he have
puka.
A pink sock?"
Yeah, why is he got a pink sock? Those were the days. It's so good to talk to you. And in terms of Courage and Stone, how can people get it now? Like they're in.
Absolutely. So what's exciting is now that we're finally kind of ramped up into market, there's lots of ways to get it. You can just go to courageandstone.com. We ship to 40 states. In these United States of America. So I know this sounds like a sales pitch, but the more you buy, the cheaper it is because it's alcohol, because it's heavy. if you just get a couple of bottles, the shipping cost is actually really high. But if you go up to 6 bottles, I think shipping is $1. So stock up for the apocalypse, everybody. And that's really, we're not making any money in the shipping. We're just passing on this cost to people. But the more that they buy, the less that it costs us to ship, because it's just one shipment. And we pay a premium for alcohol shipping. So buy a lot of booze, save a lot of money.
And I should say right now, it's great. By the way, I need to let everybody know that.
Thank you.
I think it's delicious. I'm sipping it right now. And
the old fashioned. What's great about them is they're really, really different profiles. The Manhattan is very chocolatey and dark, and the old fashioned is a classic, fruity old fashioned. I'm really proud of them. It took us a long time to get here because I'm very exacting, and I wanted these to taste not just good but singular, right? So like ours doesn't taste like anybody else's, and that was a lot of work. But I'm really pleased with that. And then if you live in LA or if you live in California, in the state of California or the state of New York, you can have the booze delivered to your house.
By Aisha Tyler herself.
By me, personally. I will walk it up to your, I will fully sanitize. I will wear a mask and gloves. And I will stand 6 feet away from
you. She's been waiting for this moment all of her life. Who's that in the hazmat suit? Who's?
I will imagine that you are that executive at E that canceled my show, and I will fling bottles at you. You can get it delivered to your house from Minibar and Drizzly. And also in California from K&L, K&L Wines. So lots of ways to find it, but curdsandsnow.com will answer all your questions. And if you follow me at Aisha Tyler on all the social platforms, I can answer your questions there as well.
Amazing. By the way, don't you think Drizzly sounds like something like an old guy would need to see a urologist about? You
know? Yes.
Do you think
yes,
that came up in any of the meetings? Yes. I got a bad case of Drizzly. And then you got some dry sack, you know.
Or there's the guy, like he's slumped over.
Oh, we lost Aisha again for a second. Hold on. Come back. Come back to us.
The internet went out. The internet went out, Tom.
Well, we're almost done anyway. I wanted to thank you, of course. It's so good to see your face. I wish I was seeing it in person.
But we are going to have, we're going to drink together so many more times in our lives.
We are. And I really do. I know this is, you know, doing any of this stuff feels a little weird to me, but I think it's cool for people to have a chance to just be able to kick back and do this while also understanding the gravity of the situation that we're in right now. And you know what? It's times like this to see an old friend makes me feel great.
And that was
fantastic. So
I agree.
Thank you.
I'm sorry that my tech was so bad. I literally, this is it. This is when everybody's home, like trying to figure out what they're going to watch on Netflix at the same time.
It's okay. I forgive you. And I have strong drink here to get me through it.
Excellent.
So that's Aisha Tyler. Thank you.
Yay.
This is Ed Lee, and you're listening to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn Podcast. Thank you.
That was the very Ed Lee, the chef that Aisha just referenced, who's running a charity thing. Go check out Ed's social media, get involved. You want to help out people in the restaurant business. That's going to do it. I apologize for the audio. I'm sure it's probably a mess, that interview, because you know that's just the way things are these days. But hopefully you got to hear most of it. I love Aisha. She's such a great person, and she's so talented. And I got to tell you, this Courage and Stone is delicious. I want to thank you guys for being here. And it's hard to end. I just want to keep going, because I don't want to go back to being alone. But I know a lot of you guys are as well. But I'm with you in spirit, and you're with me in spirit, and I appreciate that. Check you out, and we'll do another one in a couple of days. Until then, much love, my friends.